Welcome to Federal Insights for May, Business Continuity Month, sponsored by Akamai.
Business activity might be nearly choked off, but this is a busy country. People are still thinking and creating. Congress is still doing its thing. That means the U.S. Copyright Office is still on the job. For what's going on inside, we turn to the Acting Register of Copyrights, Maria Strong. Ms. Strong, good to have you on.
Thank you so much. Thanks, Tom.
And we should, I guess, point out the fact that you became Acting Register just in January of this year after a fairly good number of years in the Copyright Office. And so what's it like walking into something that suddenly the bottom fell out in terms of operation and normalcy?
Thanks for the question. Yes, I've been at the Copyright Office for 10 years. And when our former register resigned at the end of last year, I was appointed in an interim capacity by the librarian, Dr. Carmen Heda, to be the acting register. So I came in with a commitment to make sure that we continued our work, we maintained the momentum of all of our services to Congress, to the public, to the courts, and to the other executive branch agencies. I did not plan, and I think none of us did, for a pandemic. So, you know, the work of the office has been to continue what we had been doing, but also to adapt very rapidly and in very flexible ways to the current situation that affect our services.
And what is the level of activity? What's the incoming workload like these days?
Well, our work continues, as I mentioned. So our first and foremost obligation is to serve Congress. And so our legal team, both in the General Counsel's office and the Office of Policy and International Affairs, has been able to work completely remotely. So we maintain that service level to them. We continue our litigation, our regulatory work, our outreach to our executive branch colleagues. That continues, if anything, heightened a little bit. In terms of administering our services, for example, registration and recordation, we continue to receive claims for those services. And so we are able to work remotely in most cases. Where we cannot work remotely is due to the fact that we have discontinued our mail services, and some of our services do involve paper-based claims. So mail and those documents are being date-stamped and sent off to our offsite facilities, and we will make those come back to us in an orderly fashion when that decision is made. So in terms of the office level of work, we continue at a rapid pace. We were able to convert to full telework quite rapidly. Our staff had already been telework eligible. So we went from about 65% right before all this happened to the current 98% teleworking. So we are able to continue our services remotely. And where we need to make adjustments, we are doing so and advising the public on our website.
Well, does that mean that someone applying for a copyright has to wait now, or can you still issue copyrights?
Oh, no, they don't have to wait. So most of our registration claims actually do come in electronically. So you have a claim that's electronic, the deposit material is electronic, and the fee comes in electronically. And those are continuing to be processed. What sometimes happens is you might have an electronic claim with a physical deposit. And so we have to marry those up. That is a little challenging, but we have made flexibilities available so that if someone does have a physical deposit, they can, under oath, give us a photocopy or a scan, basically, of what their physical deposit looks like. And they send that in to us, and we can continue to process that. And then we'll connect everything later when we get the access to the physical deposits. Most of our registrations are in those two buckets. We do receive very few physical paper and physical deposit, and those will definitely be delayed for processing. But our registration staff has a lot of work to do on hand, and we continue to process incoming things. So people are still welcome to use our website 24/7.
So if someone still writes their songs with a quill and a piece of parchment that's lined, they should probably make a PDF of it and get it on in.
Yes. Well, actually, copyright attaches at the moment you put that quill to the piece of paper. So the copyright protection exists at that point. To get additional benefits under the law, we encourage folks to register their claim of copyright with the Copyright Office. So copyright registration gives additional bonuses and legal benefits for those. But copyright exists at the moment you've put your quill to the paper.
We're speaking with Maria Strong, Acting Register of Copyrights at the U.S. Copyright Office, part of the Library of Congress. And are you also in touch with your counterparts at the Trademark Office at USPTO? And is there any lockstep in their activity and yours, or do they kind of run their own dynamics?
Well, they do run their own thing. We are the principal agency that administers the Copyright Act. The U.S. Patent and Trademark Office obviously administers the patents and the trademarks. Copyright is different from patent and trademarks in the sense that, as I mentioned earlier, we are voluntary. You do not have to register to get a copyright, whereas for patents and trademarks, you do. So we, you know, run our own separate systems where we do cross over on the matter of, for example, policy and international trade, as we work with them as part of an interagency team to examine, you know, copyright law developments in other countries. That's where our coordination and consultation definitely crosses over. But as a matter of administrating the various acts, we are separate. Where we have converged is very recently in the sense that we've both taken advantage of the recent CARES Act that was passed by Congress and signed by the Senate that gives both of our agencies a certain emergency relief during times of national emergency. And that bill passed on a Friday, and lo and behold, by the next Tuesday, both of us had issued certain emergency relief declarations to take advantage of some of the flexibilities afforded in that act. We did not coordinate on that. It's just that we both saw the need of making sure that we were able to serve our users in a flexible way during those challenging times.
And I guess it helps you think about the starving artists right now who can't even wait tables to make money. So it's kind of a rough situation for everybody involved. And with respect to the interaction you might have directly, say, with phone calls, or perhaps somebody might need to come in sometime to the Copyright Office, how are you interacting, or are you able to interact with people that may have a question?
Well, that service continues, actually. Our Public Information Office does have a walk-in capability, and that obviously is closed when library closed the buildings to the public in early March. However, we've always had an online call system, so that continues to be very active. We continue to receive thousands of calls per week, and we are also answering thousands of emails coming in from the public per week. So that service has remained open, ready for business as well.
Before this, what level of telework was typical for the Copyright Office, or was any of it?
Actually, we did take advantage of a lot of teleworking. We have various divisions that actually rely heavily on telework. For example, Public Information Office and our registration team. Like I said, before all this happened, about 65% of our office was eligible for telework. That's not to say that 65% of the folks were out at any given day, but a lot of people did take advantage of the one day a week or perhaps 2 days a week telework. So we, over the recent years, have continued to emphasize the growth of telework. So when we had to switch to maintain health and safety considerations in early to mid-March, we were able to do so very quickly. And I will like to, you know, say kudos to our colleagues in the Office of the Information Technology, OCIO, in the library. They, you know, were fabulous in making sure that we were able to get served with the additional laptops to really hike up that number of eligibility. So we were able to transfer very seamlessly and very quickly because we had already had that foundation in place.
And how do you stay in touch with direct report managers? Is there some sort of a daily teleconference situation?
Yes, we have about 440 employees and basically seven sort of divisions. Each, you know, leader gets to manage their own division the way they see fit. In terms of the way in which I coordinate with my senior management, it's everything from phone calls to emails to various teleconferencing facilities. We have two at the office. So, you know, your headphones are on for quite a bit during the day. I will say that in my experience, I've found that this time there's a lot more efficiency in getting things done on via the telephone route. I think there's also a corresponding more amount of emails. Just yesterday, we held an all office-wide teleconference so we could bring everybody up to speed in one time and place. So we use all of the technology available at our means. And I think folks are finding that it's, you know, the best way we can to stay connected. It's certainly not a replacement for, you know, the hallway coffee runs, things like that, where you actually can get a lot of information and work done. But we are doing the best we can. And I'd say, if anything, my experience has been that we're equally efficient and productive as we've been before.
And what room of the house do you work from? And do any kids or spouses or anything else, pets, get underfoot?
No pets. Two kids. I have two teenage sons who seem to be in the nocturnal time schedule, which is great because it allows me basically 12 hours during the day to work unimpeded from my kitchen before they come down to raid the fridge. So I haven't had to worry about that. I will say there are a lot of folks in our office who do have younger children who are taking care of older folks. And, you know, the library has provided quite a few flexibilities to make sure that people are able to complete their 40 hours of work week, you know, throughout 7 days, not 5 days. And we have also been able to, as an office, take advantage of some of the recent legislation that has also allowed for that flexibility and added telework and administrative leave. So I'm, you know, very sympathetic to those folks who do have families, cats, dogs, and other things to keep them safe, but also to make sure that they have the ability to get the work done that they need and continue to contribute as they see fit.
Well, keep the hot pockets in stock. Maria Strong is Acting Register of Copyrights at the U.S. Copyright Office. Thanks so much for joining me.
Thank you so much. Be safe and have a good day.
To share this interview or hear it again, go to federalnewsnetwork.com and search Federal Insights. I'm Tom Temin.
Today, more than ever, upholding the mission of your agency is paramount. Whether that means ensuring the efficiency of remote workforce performance or scaling application availability and reliability, Akamai is here to meet you where you are and get it done, securely and seamlessly. Having supported the public sector for more than 20 years, Akamai is a trusted provider to each of the nation's cabinet-level agencies. To learn more about how Akamai can support your agency's remote workforce and business continuity, visit us at akamai.com.
Its name conjures up quiet corridors, dim light, and a slow pace, but the Library of Congress is a busy place, performing a lot of the research and providing much of the insight sought by members. So how is this old institution faring in the Great Crisis? Here to take us behind the scenes, the LOC's Director of Communications, April Slayton. Ms. Slayton, good to have you on.
Thanks, Tom. It's great to join you.
So tell us how you are operating. I know that there's lots of visitors that come through the library, but also all of this activity by members of Congress every day. I guess there's no visitors, but how's it working with the Congress?
That's right, Tom. You know, the library is usually such a busy and bustling place, and we're continuing to keep up that kind of a pace, but in a remote way. The majority of the library's staff are teleworking at the moment. We have a very limited number of employees who are performing critical responsibilities that can't be accomplished remotely, who are coming into the buildings, but that's a very low number. And the majority of staff really are accomplishing their work remotely through telework. And that includes our Congressional Research Service staff, who continue to provide the full range of services to Congress.
How many people do you think are teleworking for the LOC and the CRS altogether?
Right now, we've had as many as 4,000 concurrent users on our VPN network, which allows our employees to connect to the library's email and other file servers. So while we probably don't have 4,000 users at a time, it may be multiple devices. I'd say we have several thousand employees at any given time who are working remotely during this period.
And did you have a continuity of operations plan that would anticipate possibly everybody not being able to get in?
We did. There's definitely a very solid continuity of operations plan for the library. However, it's not a one-size-fits-all in this case where we're not in an emergency that requires only critical operations. Our goal with this period was really not just to complete the essential work, but also to allow employees who are doing other really important things that are not considered critical under a continuity of operation plan to have access and availability. And the opportunity is so large to invite the public to enjoy some of our research and resources during this period that it was really important that we not think of this purely as a continuity of operations situation.
Got it. Sure. Because I think you have programs where the public can look at documents and help you translate and otherwise see old written materials and try to put them into text format. All of those programs still going.
Absolutely. And really, we have a large number of public programs where we invite people to come to the library. One of our goals has been to extend beyond our building's walls more broadly to the public. And this has actually been a great opportunity to exercise those muscles and provide programming that's available online and digitally to people who are would-be visitors from around the country. We did a great book talk last night, National Book Festival Presents, in a virtual way with author John Barry, who wrote the 1918 book on the pandemic. So he was in conversation with our National Book Festival co-chairman, David Rubenstein, and we published that and promoted it on our social media channels. It's available on our website. So we're trying to reach people in a variety of ways during this period and provide the kinds of compelling content that we would provide in person on a regular basis.
Now, that machinery was already in place to serve the public, so I guess it was a matter of the people that would normally be maybe sitting somewhere in the library on the main network operating it had to do the operation of it remotely. Is that a good way to describe it?
That's right. Our IT staff and our multimedia group have had to think differently about how we prepare for and present programming to the public. And they've just done phenomenal work in making sure that we have the tools and the methods that we need to be able to rapidly bring this kind of content virtually to a really wide audience.
And just out of curiosity, where was David Rubenstein sitting when he was doing this interview and the author?
I believe they were both in their home offices. We accomplished it using an online communications platform, so they were able to do it from their homes. A lot of us are doing a lot of remote meetings, and it may not look as professional and perfect as it might if we were all in studio or in the auditoriums we have at the library, but it's kind of an authentic look inside the authors and presenters homes and offices, and it adds a little something interesting and intimate to the experience during this time.
April Slayton is Director of Communications at the Library of Congress. I'm Tom Temin.
Today, more than ever, upholding the mission of your agency is paramount. Whether that means ensuring the efficiency of remote workforce performance or scaling application availability and reliability, Akamai is here to meet you where you are and get it done, securely and seamlessly. Having supported the public sector for more than 20 years, Akamai is a trusted provider to each of the nation's cabinet-level agencies. To learn more about how Akamai can support your agency's remote workforce and business continuity, visit us at akamai.com.
We're speaking with April Slayton. She is the Library of Congress's Director of Communications. And let's talk about the CRS, which is getting the inbound requests from members of Congress who themselves are all over the place right now. So how are things working there, and what kinds of accommodations have you made there to keep going?
Most of the CRS staff are working remotely and are up and running. They're providing the full range of services to members of Congress with virtual briefings instead of in-person briefings. The congress.gov, which is the main search engine and the center of information sharing for CRS, is operating without any interruption. Twice a month, they're doing their regular webinars with congressional staff. And they've published 153 new written reports during this period, and they've updated another 192. So they are well at work and very busy and supporting Congress virtually with the same passion that they would in person.
And just in a given week or a given set of projects, how much do they actually access written documents like books, and how much of what they do is pretty much all online to begin with?
You know, it depends on the issue and what the researcher is working on, but many of them have access to virtual resources. Some have occasionally been able to come into the building just to retrieve specific information for a report or piece of literature that they need in order to work on it in hard copy. But a remarkable amount is available online, and it's giving a staff an opportunity to think creatively about how they identify and develop the content that they're working on.
And did everybody have a laptop with a camera and so on to begin with, or is this something you had to issue at the last minute?
Many employees did have laptops, but not all. Since the beginning of March, our IT staff have configured and distributed about 400 new laptops to help staff who haven't traditionally teleworked. And we're continuing to increase that number as we have the availability of additional laptop computers. So it's an ongoing process for employees who didn't traditionally telework, but we're steadily making progress to bringing more employees online and able to telework.
And so you're letting them know that it's okay if the dog barks or a child runs behind the camera for a minute.
It happens quite a lot. It happens here at home, and it's an okay way to balance everything. This is a complicated and unusual time, and employees are all having to make modifications. The library has developed some policy to support employees during this period for that very purpose. And I think staff are thinking differently. There's an energy and excitement about being able to find ways to connect with our audiences during this time. And I've been really amazed to see the remarkable suite of opportunities we've been able to create and share with the public during this time.
What are some of the elements of that policy that might be useful to other federal agencies? I think a lot of people are still in catch-up mode here.
It sure seems like it's an evolving process as we go. The library has developed policies that allow staff who were not teleworking before this period to have the flexibility to telework as often as they can. We've developed new projects, including By the People Transcribing, that employees can work on when they have time available during telework if they can't accomplish their full 40 hours using telework. We've implemented flexibilities and for a limited time, administrative leave of up to 20 hours per pay period for employees who are trying to balance childcare or elder care with their daily routines. And we've instituted flexibility for scheduling so that employees can work outside of core hours as early as 6 a.m. and as late as 9 p.m. in order to work in their hours and also meet their other obligations.
Interesting. And on the IT side, does the Library of Congress have its own IT staff and CIO? Or tell us about the support there.
Absolutely. Our CIO's office really has been working around the clock to make this all possible. The network that connects our employees to their email and other resources has supported an 800% increase in daily workers on the remote side. And they have a pandemic IT Tiger team, which is focused on doubling our available bandwidth for those remote workers. They're also responding very quickly to any changes in network availability and responding to hundreds of IT help desk support calls per day. So they've really stepped it up and made sure that employees have that connectivity that they need to do their work under really different circumstances, which has been wonderful.
And have you had feedback from either members of Congress or the LOC staff on how they think it's going?
We're hearing from staff that they feel very proud to be able to continue their work. We get questions very regularly and try to answer those through daily all-employee messages that we're sending to keep staff updated on health, on policy, and on other issues that are really important to them to feel connected to the larger library community during this remote period. We've had great feedback that people appreciate that regular source of communication. We've heard from members of Congress that they're very excited about some of the programming we're able to continue. They've been impressed with the level of service they've received. The briefings are ongoing and regular. And we're working to make sure that members of Congress can share with their constituents some of the engaging content that we're able to provide online. So there's been great feedback in all of those areas.
And a final question. Of course, there are lots of physical resources, and I've been in some of those reading rooms that the public doesn't see as much, and the stacks at the library. There must be somebody going in to make sure there's no water pipes leaking and no broken windows and nothing falling off the shelves.
Yes, we absolutely have a critical core team who continue to report to the library and make sure that the books and resources that we have are maintained well. We've also worked closely with the U.S. Capitol Police who provide our security. They've been an incredible support during this time in ensuring that everything is secure and well cared for while most of the staff are out of the office.
April Slayton is Director of Communications at the Library of Congress. Thanks so much for joining me.
Thanks, Tom.
To share this interview or hear it again, go to federalnewsnetwork.com and search Federal Insights. I'm Tom Temin.
Thank you for listening to Federal Insights for May, sponsored by Akamai on Federal News Network.